VPN and various other things that could not be met. Were there any consideration given to ensure that violence take place to other line items to ensure that at least we could use that money more adequately and efficiently? Chairperson, I do think you know that I've mentioned in my speech that I was very much concerned about the NQF Amendment Bill. I'm glad that on the 28th of March this year, the minister actually did look at it. It was approved. But now we just need to find out, Chair, when will this then be tabled before Parliament for proper discussion and for Parliament to approve it as well? And also, Chairperson, if we can then just get a brief summary of the public participation engagement on this bill, so that we can see the input from the various road sectors which they gave regarding this particular bill. Chair, the Minister also mentioned about the feasibility studies of the two new universities. I think since last year, this was mentioned that there was a feasibility study. I do think it is probably being completed. So if we can just be furnished with the feasibility studies of the two new universities, so that we can have a proper discussion as the committee with the department in this regard, and also to see how far it is for it to lead now to proper construction and implementation phase. That would be very helpful, Chairperson. Then, Chair, when I read the report on the independent assessor on UNISA, its extensive remarks was made about the concern of open learning education that UNISA is probably lagging behind in that regard. I just wanted to find out that they say that the e-learning and open learning strategy in the PSET sector was then approved on the 16th of February this year. If at some stage the department can just give us a brief on this strategy and also add on to how you the UNISA actually would fit into upgrading their e-learning strategy as well. I'm skipping quite a few. Then, Chair, I just wanted to find out in terms of legal and consultation fees, were there any incurred during this time? We do know that there were various SIU investigations during this time. No mention was made which SIU investigations actually occurred within this time frame or any report that was received within this time frame. And then, Chair, lastly, when it comes to the post-provisioning norms of TVET colleges, I'm very much concerned that this is a recurring target that is not being met. So I would just like to get an understanding what interventions thus far has taken place to ensure that the TVET colleges actually comply with giving in the PPNs. And also, when we consider the PPNs, I haven't even gone through the legislation, so I'm just asking the ratio that they are considering regarding lecturer-student ratio, if that can be given to us per course so that we can then understand if it's feasible in terms of capacity-wise to ensure that we have an effective PPN, and then also the cost that it would be to the institution to onboard teaching staff or even cleaning staff onto the PPN per cell system. That's all from my side. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable King. Honorable Sibiya.
Thanks, Chairperson. Greetings to everyone. Thanks for both presentations. With regard to the ODSI and with regard to the Austro Tourism Strategy and Implementation Plan joint project with Department of Tourism, does the department have set times, frame, targets for implementing the plans? In under performance quarter four, the presentation states that the likelihood for the target set to fill vacancies would not be met. How is the department planning on ensuring that in the future this process is adequately planned for? And the other one is, will the department have baseline to measure a target for the University of Technology and TVET graduates that were to be offered experiential learning opportunities in the energy sector by 31st March 2023? With the targeting of young people, particularly in townships and rural communities, has the implementation of the project been successful? And how many beneficiaries benefited from this program? What were the examination outcomes of the impact of COVID-19 lockdown on productive health rights in rural populations? The question is, how is the department dealing with the impacts of that research? I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Ma'am Sibiya. Honorable Ngobo.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, colleagues. A lot has been covered by the honourable members that have spoken before me, so I just have a few questions for this head. The first one is under Program 2, and it's just a request for the department to give us a briefing on the findings and recommendations of a report on the implementation of gender equality and GBV policy framework for the PCTA system, which was approved by the DG on 16 February this year. And also under Program 4, it has been indicated that the student disability unit was established in a TVET college. So I just want to find out in which TVET college was this student disability unit established, and also if the department has any plans to establish these disability units in TVET colleges across the country. And also, can the department share a list of the revised or new subject curricula with the committee so that we know the changes or the revisions on the subject or new subject curricula in TVET colleges. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngobo. Honorable Chirwa.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Greetings, colleagues, and everybody else that is in this meeting. Thank you so much, the department, for their presentation. These are my questions. I want to find out first on Program 1 from DHET. Yeah. You know, because there's a continuous failure to achieve the target on procuring services and products from women. So there's clearly a pattern here on this part that needs to be looked into further than just continuously always giving the recommendation that it must be fixed. And this recommendation by the portfolio committee being ignored with every single quarter and every single performance analysis. There's people who are clearly undermining this resolution that we keep giving to the department and blaming legislation for it, which I think is shortcoming, because to blame legislation in particular, because our constitution already caters for equality and non-discriminative treatment as is. So fundamentally, our foundation has already fought on the issue of this. It can't be that legislation is cited as a reason why services or service providers that are primarily women are not used by departments. There must be an internal process that roots out the insistence to undermine the committee deliberations on this. Every single time the department is here to speak about this or to present and capture this particular aspect, and also the insistence to undermine the department's decision, right? Because these are your targets as well. This is your target as a department, that you want to move in this direction, and it is consistently undermined. So maybe the department must tell us as a committee what's the reason they are failing at this, because businesses owned by and run by women exist, and they can be supplies for the department. This particular target is one of the easiest targets to do, unless there's other political factors that I think we should know as a committee. Like, kune problem with procurement system yenu, which is a serious thing, because we know issues regarding tenders as is, right? And that's why we always state that building state capacity should always be the direction to go. We see it at different levels in different departments on how people manufacture crises just to get opportunities for these tenders. So please appreciate the committee if there are no women applicants of providing services. And if they are, how many of these applicants apply and why they are so overlooked for years post the recommendation that the committee has given, even with the last quota performance analysis, so that the committee can be able to look into it, and because I want to know really what then does the department do. So forget that the committee's resolution or recommendation is ignored, right? But this is your target as a department. Like, you are being ignored as leaders in the department, unless if you're also involved in this whole thing. Like, why is there no consequence management on the fact that it's 2023? Honestly, we can't be dealing with the issue that women can't be overlooked on the procurement of services by the Department of Higher Education and Training. This is wrong. Please advise what exactly is going on here, much more decisively than what you've been able to do for the past numerous times. And second to that, I want to know what the reason is for the department facing a challenge with resolving the vacancy rate. And then with Program 5, the 22,000 number of learners entering artisanal programs annually, where the preliminary is at 10K. I want to find out what the department is planning to do about employers, because that's cited as a reason, about employers closing down and being unable to take in learners. I'm asking this because more employers will be placed in this particular situation, not because of COVID, but because of load shedding. We are seeing the trend already that is happening. And we need to prevent that the department is going to come back here and say, oh, yeah, no, we were unable to do this target because of load shedding and employers started closing down. So I want to know what are the response methods the department has devised so far that you have developed to still be capable to achieve this target despite the changing economic climate. Like, what's the department's contribution beyond just placing learners, but being active precursors of collaboratively building environment for targets such as this one in particular to be achievable? Please tell us in detail. Or be vague about it. If there is no plan, please state that there is no plan so that we can also keep, moving you in that direction of ensuring that you make a plan, because I can already foresee that the next time you will be telling us about load shedding and employers closing down. And then also on Program 5, with 148K learners registered in skills development programs annually, I want to find out which of these skills development programs were negatively affected by COVID that prevented 50K students from being registered in the year 2020. Please explain how exactly COVID affected this target, and give tangible examples tied to this failure, like names of those organizations, those institutions, the processing and all of those things that really were put on a stop or on a halt. And this is the reason is similar to the one above of employers shutting down and stuff like that. And number six, on Program 6, on the number of pilot community centers accredited, I want to find out what was the purpose of this particular target. Where is it moving the department to? And what then is the impact of it not being achieved at all? Like, for it being to be at 0%, how does that impact the direction that the department wanted to take by making it a specific target? And then to DSI, I just have three questions. I want to find out what are these 15 tourism technology products that you guys are speaking about and how they are faring in the market, how they are helping, what the purpose is, like what is the current status of these products that you are putting on tourism technology. And second to that, you said something about having given support to a grade 12 learner. I don't know if you're saying you gave support by giving her a platform to speak So I want you to please appraise us on what exactly is the support that you speak of, that you create, that you gave to the mathematics and science grade 12 learner. Because ngathi sendlala ngathi la if nikhuluma ngokuthi nimpe iplatform yokukhuluma. Because if that is the direction, in fact, then we can even fight exploitation. That people are presenting at your events, and then you're saying you're giving them a platform, and that is support. When we know that Nani or some of you guys who are into public speaking don't speak for free, but you're letting learners speak for free here, and then you're saying you're supporting them. So please just appraise us on what. Let me not just go over, because I really don't know what you're speaking about on this kind of support. So please just appraise on that. And then lastly, I want to, because at the vote 17 debate, the minister cited that, you know, some of the recommendations that they gave as the EFF that the department is already doing. So on one of them, I want to find on this particular, I'll ask about the other ones in written questions to the minister, because I want detailed responses. I want to find out how the department has incentivized innovation on energy, aerospace, and drones in the past year. That is all. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chirwa, Honorable Pele.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to you and all colleagues and everyone on the platform. Chair, I think firstly, it is important to acknowledge the gains and achievements that are made by both DSI and DS. And we must applaud that and appreciate that, and also say that we acknowledge the achievements and gains that have been made. Chair, let me move to my questions in respect of DSI. The first one I have a concern about is the 18 interns out of the total of 1,057. 18 interns are people with disabilities. Now, this is about 1.7%, and I'm just wanting to know whether is this just trying to meet the employment quota in terms of 2%? Because really, we should be looking at how we go more and above that. And for me, that's, you know, just a small number, 18 out of 1,057. And the same applies for funding of students. And if you look on that same slide, there are higher numbers when it comes to students in honors, masters, PhD, but the interns are so low. And then, Chairperson, in program one, under the overview of underperformance, the question is, who makes up the selection committee? Because the reason given there for non-achievement was that there was a delay in recruitment and selection processes and that it won't be achieved because of the selection committee. And the question is, who makes this up? And why then can it not be achieved if you're able to get this selection committee? Then on manufacturing of three or more CubeSats, it says on that slide that the delays were caused by several reasons, but it just says, you know, it's the resignation and funding. I just want to know, what are those reasons? Is it just the resignation of staff and funding, or are there other reasons? Because it just doesn't specify if there are any other reasons. It says caused by several reasons, but it just lists two. Then on how many UOT and TVET graduates were offered experiential learning opportunities? Now, I know that it was said this is new, and so you're not able to measure or evaluate in terms of a yardstick. But if this was a set target and it was achieved, then why are we saying not achieved? Because we have actually provided these learning opportunities. And then capacity building, Chair, is very important, but clearly this is not achieved. And what is the plan in terms of how we're going to work on capacity building and ensure that we do achieve that? And then the last one there on DSI is the RDI projects were actually forfeited due to non-expenditure. What does that mean going forward? if they have been forfeited, and what has been the remedy or action? I know that it was forfeited, but was there any discussions or perhaps even some kind of guide on how they could have done this thing differently? Then on DHET, the targets around planning and policy and strategy, I am concerned because it really is very concerning that there's almost a 50-50, because you have a 52%, which is 12 that's achieved and 11 that's not achieved. And I think it is very concerning. It also seems like there is serious challenges around TVET, if you look at the slides that's explaining that. Then the next one is, which are the two CETAs that did not provide documentary evidence for good governance? And if they have not provided it, what is DHET doing about them correcting that? Then in respect of community learning centers being accredited, I saw there was 0%. And the question is, what is being done to empower them in order to capacitate them so that they do become compliant? Because I think that community learning centers will be a great initiative moving forward. Then there's the last one is around the slide that said cluster of reasons for underachievements during quarter four. For me, it just shows a pie with no information. So I'm not sure what information should have been on that slide, or perhaps I'm missing something. But it did read cluster of reasons for underachievements during quarter four, and there was nothing else that was said to that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Pillay. Honourable Yabo. Honourable Yabo.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll just open my video briefly. Load shedding challenges interfere with our connectivity. And I'm going to switch it off. thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I appreciate the presentations and welcome them. That's the first thing. The second thing, let me greet everyone in the meeting. Acknowledge the minister, acknowledge the acting DG and the DG from both DHET and DSI, honorable members present, officials from both the departments. I want to, first and foremost, upfront say that it is encouraging to see the Department of Higher Education and Training having been able to spend 99% of their budget, but also acknowledge the fact that most of the budget is disbursed to parties within the department. And I would also want to add my voice to the fourth quarter performance report. Let me start off with the reason why some of the money was not spent. And in the report, we see that there's a common thread around the compensation of employees being the reason why you have a lot of the percentage of unspent money being because of that particular challenge. And that the bulk of it rests with the TVET program. The question I would ask is that, because this looks to me to be a problem that has persisted for a while in relation to the compensation of employees and the submissions from the TVET colleges themselves on the post-provisioning norms. When is the department anticipating this problem to be resolved? And what actions has the department taken to intervene in ensuring that the problem is resolved? Because it's a recurring problem. I mean, quarter on quarter, we have seen its impact. In actual fact, in the third quarter, it had a greater impact than we are seeing now in the fourth quarter. And this says to us that the feeling of vacancies is something that is not in the main a priority to the department. And of course, we are reading the pace at which the department is moving to resolve the problem. And we would want to see the problem resolved, because many of the targets that have been missed, the critical reason provided is that the chief directorates are undercapacitated. They do not have the requisite capacity to see through the achievement of targets. And if we are to use linear thinking, capacity refers to available human resource within the chief directorates themselves. And so this problem is having a knock-on effect on other areas of targets that are not achieved. And so we would want to see a really stern approach by the department to see this problem resolved. And the department must also take on a hands-on approach in assisting the post-provisioning norms, the documentation being submitted by the TVETs to the department to ensure that it's able to load people onto the payroll system of the department who are located within colleges for purposes of disbursing the funds. Now, having spoken and dealt with that, there is a a part of the presentation on the fourth quarter from DHEB that there are two sitters which have not submitted reports, performance reports. Who are these sitters? We would prefer that perhaps they name them so that we know which sitters these are, and not that there's just two sitters there who have not reported. I would think that, Chair, the improvement on the performance of the department, though we can appreciate that it's very difficult to aggregate the performance of the department without really zooming into the various programs or the five programs of the department. The university program is the best performing in the quarter, with the skills development program being the least performing. What initiatives are being taken to ensure that the programs in the department are brought on par in as far as performance is concerned? And is there any initiative to try and look at whether the targets that the department puts for itself are realistic or not, right at the beginning of the financial year, and that in the process of doing midterm reviews, could there be a need to rationalize some of these targets to ensure that performance is seen to be on par across all programs and not lag behind in one area and perform well in another? I mean, if we're to use the metric of measure that academics use to measure whether you would have passed with an A or not, the university branch would be 2% short of making it as a distinction, distinctions to that. But a lot more is left to be desired with other programs within the department. And I think there needs to be a centralized approach to looking at performance of the various programs so that we don't have a silo-like performance across the department. And that's what I wanted to speak to really on the higher education and training. And we appreciate the fact that now it looks like the NSF is coming out of the doldrums into clearing itself to regaining momentum into performing, you know, coming from the recent history of the scathing reports on it. And we would want to see programs, as the minister would have said and alluded to at the beginning of the meeting, that there is a greater push from his side to get CTAS and the NSF to move into higher-end skills to ensure that these higher-end critical skills are prioritized by the CTAS and the NSF. We would want to see a disaggregated dashboard report sent to us. And by disaggregated dashboard report, Chair, I'm necessarily speaking to a breakdown of demographics in terms of beneficiaries. Secondly, a breakdown of sectors that are targeted for this funding. And also, I would want to see a greater appreciation of the fact that if you are going to move into creating learnerships that target high-end skills and postgraduate students, it's very difficult to attract postgraduate students to these programs when the stipend is in the region of what is paid to EPWP beneficiaries. I think there needs to be a revision of the stipends model where it concerns postgraduate students who form part of these programs, learnerships, workplace, based learning, so on and so forth. The stipend is not attractive enough, and this is why you would find that when we get the disaggregated reports, Chair, on the skills development, as well as these learnership programs, postgraduate development programs, the demographics will be telling that those who would have a base income other than the stipend itself would be more keen to enrolling for postgraduate training and learnerships than those who come from a zero base who would not necessarily have an income because it's not attractive enough. And many resign themselves to rather going for work rather than getting into these programs that would be provided by either the NSF or the CTAS themselves. And I'm saying the department should look into making sure that the incentive becomes attractive to also those who do not have a base income, because it would then be the reason why you have skewed demographics at output level, where those who would have this base income would much more participate in these programs because they don't have to worry about earning a living. Already they are sorted. Now, Chair, without laboring the point, let me move on to the DSI. And I think I would want to speak to, no, in actual fact, I'm still on the head chair. I'm sorry about that. Which is going to be my last question. Noting that the department and the MIC, CT, CETA had signed a 3-year agreement to develop ICT and 4 IR skills for youth, young entrepreneurs and emerging innovators in South Africa. How many have benefited from this program as there are successful workshops that are elaborated on? And what is the specific focus on rural youth and township youth in relation to this program? And the last question to the DSI chair, noting this crisis that we find ourselves in with water now, I think the electricity crisis, we have really spoken a lot on it, and it's something that needs urgent attention to be resolved. Now we have a water crisis. I read recently an article that says traces of cholera were found in the Vaal River system, which is a cause for alarm because of the amount of people who get water from the Vaal River water system. What is the Department of Science and Innovation doing to enter the fray, as it were, to assist with resolving the crisis? And of course, there are hotspots for the crisis that are there. But is there a plan to deal with the water contamination crisis? That's the first thing. Secondly, is there a plan to assist with technologies that can be localized to treat water for consumption purposes, and that may be cheap compared to the current bulk water treatment plants that are there? Is there technology that the department is aware of that can be deployed at relatively rent for rent is cheaper than what would be required to deploy, for example, a wastewater treatment plant that can help with the crisis we are facing? And I think the recent death toll in the Amanskraal case, and not just there, also in the Northwest, in the Free State, we've seen reports of contaminated water and people falling ill because of that. Is there a plan? If there is a plan, is there budget for it? And I'm speaking in relation to this because it's an immediate crisis. So those are my questions, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Yabo. Honorable Litie.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Chair, to yourself, Honorable Members, Minister, Deputy Minister, DG Mdwaga, Acting DG of DHET, all DDGs, all officials from Parliament and from the Department. Good afternoon. Chair, maybe I must start on a lighter note and say that it was very nice to hear Honorable Chirwa asking questions, you know, calmly today, unlike, you know, the other time. I think that was on a lighter note. And I'm sure Minister would also agree. At least she asked nicely today, Minister. Let's welcome the report. let's welcome all the reports and opening from the minister. Chair, there's I think maybe let me start with an advice to both the departments. And I think, Minister, yourself and the two DGs should spearhead this so that we avoid a situation where we present an APP like we have now. And this APP is not supported by a focused plan on how quarter by quarter we're going to achieve this target. Currently now we've just adopted or got a presentation on the APP from the department, which we have approved. Now, what the department should do, Minister, is that I'm suggesting that they must put together something like a project management plan on how quarter by quarter they are going to achieve this this result, and they must follow it like they follow the audit action plan. So that must be the blueprint of the day to day working at the department. At project management level, what do you do before you start a program or a project? Sorry, you are given timelines that at the end of the second quarter, this is what we want to have achieved. And the second quarter starts on the 1st of June. So you go back to the 1st of June where you don't have anything that has been achieved. So, you know, it's a pyramid-like arrangement. So you move from where you want to be at the end of the second quarter, which will be the end, maybe the 31st of August. That should be the timeline. Maybe you say, and the 31st of July, on the 30th of June, this is what the milestone we want to have achieved month by month, so that by the end of the quarter we have achieved all our targets in that particular quarter. Then you put plans into place to, you know, to say the 30th of June I must have achieved 33% of the targets. How do I make sure that I get to you put a plan to achieve that? 31st of July, you put plans as to you must have achieved 66.7% minimum. And 30th of September, or the last day of September, which is the end of the quarter, you must have achieved 100%. So you put plans into place. So everybody, when they come to work, they know they are working towards this monthly target, towards the realization of us reaching the target of the quarter that one. So but that program or that plan, you know, you are creating many plans that are contributing to the realization of the 100% performance target achievement of the entire APP. So, because if we don't do that, Minister, we may think we have time. So the first quarter, we don't do much on this one. You know, we're relaxing on that one. We're pushing on this one. No, before we open our eyes, it's already the 1st of January. We're now in the last quarter. And that is why sometimes the departments are accused of doing fiscal dumping. They're accused of overachieving in the fourth quarter as compared to the previous quarters. It's because, in my view, there's no these mini plans that contribute to the major plan. Because the assumption we're making is that when you put together an APP, you would have had many things that contributed to it. One of them would be the impact, but one of them would be, you know, you have satisfied yourself that these plans are achievable. And if they're achievable, you then look at the capacity that you have sorry, internally, making sure that you are able to then achieve all of these things. So maybe that is the first advice one to give a minister to both departments, so that you know, we don't have this thing already. You know, we're just doing plans without necessarily thinking them through, or we're putting together an APP that, you know, for compliance purposes and all kinds of accusations we have. Maybe let me start with DSI. Slide 8, Program 5, I think, which is the skills branch, the DG Mvalo, does not look good. It does not look good because it says you've only achieved 3 of the 11 targets in the fourth quarter, dismal performance. Maybe let them take us through what happened. What would have been the 8 other targets on the skills thing that they wanted to train our people and they did not achieve them? Are those skills that they wanted or they planned on achieving or training our people with, are they not sufficient? Are they not, were they not going to assist young and old people, you know, to have a fighting chance in, you know, playing part in the economic, in the mainstream economy? And if they were, what is the impact of not having, you know, my assumption is that this is a huge 8 out of 11 that were not achieved. It's huge. It must not even be understated. It's extremely huge. It's something that we hope it does not happen again. But we believe if you adopt that project management like plan, with monthly targets and quarterly targets properly, you'll be able to achieve something and will not be sitting here asking you this question. Minister, you invited us to your breakfast last week, Wednesday. And I must say that with the program, how the program unfolded, I was very happy that I was there. Why? Because In before I went there, Minister, you know, I had a perception review that NSF might not really be necessary to, you know, to continue in its current form. But I said that I listened to real life stories or testimonies of young people from deep rural areas, giving testimonies on how NSF assisted them from their own villages, fetched them from their own villages. Today, one of them was saying there's an actual, you know, working for, as he puts it, one of the biggest accounting firms in the world, coming from a rural village in Mpumalanga. The problem I have, Minister, is that NSF is not doing enough in communicating the successes. And that is why even myself sitting in this portfolio committee would have had you know, thinking, you know, that maybe NSF is not relevant, you know. So we want to ask the department to help NSF to communicate better these beautiful programs that they are doing. Because, I mean, we have SABC, which is the national broadcaster. Their primary role is to communicate everything, is to report the good and the bad. At least they say BC. Others say they might decide maybe they just want to concentrate on the bed. You know, they are private. You can't really force them there except on the media freedom. But generally, SABC minister should be utilized properly to communicate all these good stories so that our people can know about these programs. You know, that what I saw there, Minister, you know, gave me courage that we might be getting somewhere. And I want to implore on you and the department to put pressure on these ones of NSF to communicate these beautiful programs. And not maybe not only NSF, DSI, the whole department, the skills branch, obviously not when they're achieving 3 out of 11, TVET colleges, which performed very well, and all of these things except on post-provisioning, obviously. But, you know, there's a lot of good that is happening that the departments are not utilizing the media platforms that are there to communicate such things. You know, so the media teams of the department must also, you know, release these things for social media in either video and graphics and all of that. So, it, you know, we must do all we can to make sure that what we are supposed to be communicated and what we are doing, the good thing, indeed is communicated. On the financials, I think maybe let me first start by saying if the individual branches in the Department of Higher Education don't execute the plans or the programs, don't achieve the programs, there's no way we can achieve or finance or the CFO or that department can spend 100% of the money, because this money is attached to a program. So if these programs are not achieved, the money will not be spent. So we can't say, why have you not spent this much or your entire budget when programs have not been achieved. But where I have an issue, CFO, with your department is on the payment of invoices within the 30 days. Sorry. Last year when we asked this team, we said, or was it in the last quarter, I think, report, we said to you, why are these people on time within 30 days? And maybe, you know, when how you answered, well, I was not satisfied because it suggested that we may have not asked the question correctly. Today we are going to ask it correctly because we don't want you to answer the way you did by telling us that some service providers should have submitted an invoice with problems or mistakes. It will then be sent back and all of that technical things that you guys said last time. So I want to ask it correctly because this is what the policy says. We want you to pay service providers within 30 days after the valid invoice has been submitted. So in this case, in your old report, you are saying there are 19 invoices you have not paid with valid invoices you have not paid within 30 days. It says 19 in your own report. And I heard when a senior member who was presenting on behalf of the department says something about 4 and all of that. And then on the financials, it says it's 99.5, 54 or 45 a percentage. And maybe before I ask this question again, maybe I want to bring you understand why this is extremely important to us. Today is the last day of the month, Minister. Tomorrow is the beginning of the new month. Small businesses are expected to pay their employees, to pay their suppliers, to pay rent, to possibly you know, pay or buy diesel for their generators. So generally today or this week or week before the end of the month is an extremely stressful time for small businesses, especially those who do not have big bank balances or reserves for them to just go there and just get from the reserves to pay. So when we say 30%, this thing was not just drafted because somebody at Treasury was bought. It was based on lived experiences of small businesses. So can you take us through what would have been the reason for you not to pay these small businesses on time within 30 days? this may impact the survival negatively, impact negatively the survivals of their businesses. And in rand value, this 4.45 or 5.6% in rand value, how much is that? 99.5. So it might be 6% or all of that. What in rand value, how much is this? The reasons behind us not pay. And is there any consequence management battle for those who are supposed to be processing these things and not paying them? Minister, when we go to our constituencies, as we are going to go to a constituency period now, we will hear all kinds of stories that this department does not want to pay me because they want, you know, this person there said they want me to buy them a cold drink or all of this before I'm paid and all of that. And if you see that there are those that have submitted valid claims and have not been paid within 30 days, you know, we sit back and wonder, is this really happening in this day and age? Do we really have people who are saying to people, in order to pay you, you must pay cold drink? Is that really happening? And, you know, we start asking ourselves those questions, Minister. On page 60, on the Standing Committee on Appropriations, quota for report, it stated that this department spent 10.3 billion of an available budget of 10.7 billion for compensation of employees, resulting in underspending of just over 400 million on the 555 vacant funded posts, mainly in program 4. And this underspending is mainly due to delays in implementing PPM at TVET colleges, where the required documents were not submitted on time. The department is currently working closely with TVET college management to ensure that all the necessary human resource management requirements needed to implement this PPN are met. There is also an underspending, obviously, on compensation of employees in Program 1, 2, 3, and 6. We want to ask DDG Zungu, which posts are vacant at these TVET colleges, and when will this be filled? So this question we want you to give to us in writing. We also want you to say that this is why we could not fill this. We must be specific. So you do a spreadsheet and you say, because I mean the Western Minister used the West Call. At West Call, we have a vacant post of Deputy Principal. We have not filled it. So this is when it became vacant. We have not filled it in the previous financial year because of these reasons. And this would have been an impact it had, because I don't think these posts are just created for no reason. So they are created because those people who are going to fill them, they've got a role to play in making sure that our TVET colleges become TVET of choice. You know, they contribute towards that. So they've not been, you know, filled. And this is the impact. So I want you to, on your own spreadsheet, to do it. And I want you to know, because in others you are saying, by the way, this is not the first time, you know, this thing has happened of delaying or delays in filling of vacant posts at our TVET colleges. It has been happening for a while now. So we want you to give us a plan now, which I want to propose, Chair, that we must follow it up within the next 3 months. We must follow up again on this thing and check how far have we moved in filling of vacancies at TVET colleges, that they themselves will give a report from college 1 to college 50, position 1 to position A to position Z. So they'll then do that spreadsheet, give us at West Call, we've got 10 vacancies. These are the vacancies. This is the plan. When do we believe that we would have filled them? This is the challenge, why we have not filled them and all of that. So we want them to do that. And I want us, Chair, to follow up with them in 3 months. We want to see how far are they in filling this post, so that we don't come back again and still talk about it, because this is not the first time. I mean, we're talking about this post provisioning. Okay, 32 December last year, we considered the first and second quarter financial and non-financial performance reports of the department. At this meeting, the department reported that it did not achieve its target during the first quarter, April to June. We have the vacancy rate below 10%. It's them who reported. The department ascribed the reasons for deviation to the PPN process, including that a process of placing and matching was conducted at the same time at the 26 TVET colleges. So I want to ask them, when did the PPN process commence? What are the original timeframes to complete this process? This process, the PPN process, including the process of placing and matching, was conducted at the same time at this 26 TVET colleges. When was that? Is the process at this 26 TVET colleges completed? If not, why not? And which are the outstanding colleges that still need to go through the PPN process and placing and matching and all of that? Chair, maybe this one I must ask Honorable Manani to send me a question. And she says I must ask these questions. The delays in the submission of claims form by examiners and moderators in all the quarters, cause program 4 and program 6 to underspend. And so she says, I must ask, what strategy or strategies you have in place to ensure that these examiners and moderators adhere to the submission time frame? And did the department incur an unauthorized, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure during the fourth quarter? If so, how much was incurred in unauthorized, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure? She also says, I must ask, the department must give details of the unauthorized, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and in which branch or program did the unauthorized, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure occur? And can the department also confirm that it did not incur any unauthorized, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure during all the four quarters of 2022-2023 financial year? Chairperson, I want to pause here for both myself and Honorable Manoniso, and thank you for the time you provided to us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lizie. Thank you very much to all honorable members for your comments and questions on both the presentations from the DSI and the DHET. Minister, those are then the comments, questions, recommendations from members. I will hand over to you and you will delegate accordingly to your teams on how they'll respond to these questions. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair. I am in a bit of a dilemma because the time is 12:30 and your meeting is supposed to finish at 1. Now, I would be tempted to say, let the officials start. But if they are going to go in such a way that when I come in, I'll go beyond 1, I'll have a problem. Because I have other commitments as the meeting is supposed to finish at 1. Now, I will then, I think, take a risk. I'm here till 1 o'clock, but not beyond. Take a risk and be the one who, because I think there are a few issues really that requires my attention. And then give to the DGs to then actually respond, such that if they go beyond 1 o'clock, I will request that you excuse me at that time, Chair. Now, if you allow me then, let me do that. Ordinarily, I would prefer to do the end after the officials have finished. The issue of that is raised by Honorable King on the feasibility study of the two new universities. I still have to go to cabinet on that. So I can't come to the portfolio committee before I go to cabinet, because it's cabinet that must first receive that report and respond to it, such that when then I come to the portfolio committee, I would also come with something much more complete. It's not just an academic exercise. Cabinet would also have indicated what is to happen about that. So unfortunately on that, I can't accede to it, not because I've got real problems in sharing with the portfolio committee, but it must be done at the right time. I think if I'm not mistaken, it was something talk about a brief on UNIS. I can't remember now whether it was Honorable King who actually spoke about that. Let me just explain very briefly the UNISA matter. UNISA, I gave them a report. I don't have the date now. I hope that some of my officials have the date. I gave them 14 days and then they request another 21 days in addition to 14 days. I have responded to them to say I'm only giving them an additional 10 working days. And the reason I'm reluctant to do that is because I don't want this report to actually stay too long before something gets finalized. They are clearly very naughty individuals who are actually using this report to begin to say all sorts of things in private and in public. And all of them forgetting, by the way, that for now it's my report. It's the minister's report from the assessor that has been given to me. And the longer we get it staying out there, remember that I've got 30 days by which I've given everybody through the public, through the government gazette. I would like that the report, in fact, the 14 days expired on the 12th of May. And I gave them the report, sorry, on the 12th of May. And then the 14 days ended on the 26th, which is last Friday. And then an extra, from last Friday, then I'm giving them an extra 10 working days, which means it's till that other week. Also, because I don't want that the response of UNISA comes too close to the end of the day of the gazetting for open public comment, so that myself and the department will get time to actually deal with the report. I think also it's enough time really that I've given to it. Yeah, the Gazette came out on Friday, officially. And the report, by the way, is now handed over to the Speaker of Parliament, who, of course, will decide what to do and possibly bring the report to the attention of the relevant portfolio committee, which is yourselves. So that is what is happening now. I also dissuaded the Council of UNISA, I want to say this publicly, from wanting to act on the basis of the report. I had to remind them that much as they are the council, I respect that the council can take whatever decisions it wants, but they must be very careful that they can't take decisions on the basis of my report, which I haven't pronounced on it. And that is what I've officially written to them and told them. That remember, it's my report, and I've still got to act on the report after these processes. And I don't want the report to turn into a political football or into a factional football in terms of various interests that may be having particular agendas or objectives in relation to UNISA. But the report is going to come your way as the portfolio committee, and you will deal with it, I guess, respond to it, deal with it as you see fit in terms of the separation of powers. I'll action it, but the parliament has the right also to discuss it. I don't fully understand what Honorable Chiwa is saying. I'm sure maybe the officials heard as to what incentives have been provided in terms of dealing with energy, you know, and so on. There's lots that has been done there. Firstly, and mainly by the DSI. The DSI, for instance, is leading the Hydrogen Society roadmap, which is an alternative source of energy where we are actually doing a lot of work. We've also got what we call coal COX2, which is a carbon capture. And there's a whole range of other things that we are doing that DG Mjoha, Dr. Mjoha, can actually further outline. I hope that he will actually do so in terms of the details, because there's lots. I wasn't exactly sure when we're talking about incentives. We have got general incentives that the DSI gives to research and development, irrespective of the area. And I'm sure that it would cover those who are doing innovation, private companies doing innovation in the energy space. They will get incentives in relation to that. And then the DG can be able to go into some detail in terms of what work we are actually doing and what incentives are there. I don't want anyone to be left with the impression that the question implies that we are doing nothing. We are doing a lot.
Point of order, Chairperson.
And we have... Chair, someone is calling for a point of order.
I think maybe the chair has got network issues. What's the point of order?
Thank you very much. My question was, how has the department incentivized innovation on energy, aerospace, and drones, not just incentivized programs or whatever? I want to know on the innovation part that the department has done to incentivize on energy, aerospace, and drones. That was my question.
Yeah, no, Honorable Chiro. I think the minister, when he started, he did indicate that the DG will respond to others. So when the minister responds to one, it does not mean he's out of order. The DG is still going to come. Thank you very much. Continue, Minister.
Thanks, Honorable Acting Chairperson. Thank you very much for saving my day. But I still want to insist, by the way, that for a member of this portfolio committee, I wouldn't expect such a question. Because we've made so many presentations.
Then I'm gonna meet you at your level of disrespect.
No,
if you forgot that I can almost meet you at your level of disrespect.
Thank you, Honorable Itie. I had
it's a very clear question.
Restroom.
And my personhood. I didn't speak about your personhood. I'm asking on programs that you have done on innovation, on aerospace, drones, and energy.
Honorable Chirwa. All right. Honorable Minister.
Yes.
Honorable Itie, thank you for stepping in there. I had to step aside for a second. Can I please ask colleagues that we try and address the issues at hand, all of us. Honorable Chirwa, when we speak to each other, colleagues, let's address the issues and not the individuals. Minister, we expect the same from you. Let's stick to the matter that is being addressed and not make personal attacks on each other, and expect that from all of us in this committee. You may continue, Minister.
Yes. Chair, though, I do need to say I haven't made any personal attack on anyone. All I said was the fact that I find it unusual.
Just answer the question. Answer the question. Nobody cares what you find
would
usual
or not know about what we are doing on energy innovation, on aerospace. We report.
Then tell us.
So
tell us. Tell us, Minister. Do it. Tell us. Tell us what you are doing.
With attacking the person. And the DG is going to give more details on that, as I'm actually saying. But as the minister, I do have a duty to point out that we have chair reported on these matters. And I also
answer the question.
On the grounds that I have reported.
Honorable Minister, 1 second, please. Honorable Itie.
I was saying we're now forced to call order on Honorable Chirwa that can we not be abused as members in this committee? The minister is clearly indicating that the DG will answer the other questions. When Honorable Chirwa is coming in, answer the question. Can we not be disrespected as a committee in this meeting? Can she raise her hand to call
no, can members please raise their hands?
My hand has been raised, Chairperson. So I'm raising it again on the platform.
Honorable Chirwa, I am speaking. Honorable members, we're not going to do this. I have said it before that we're not going to deteriorate the engagement of this meeting and of this committee. I do not expect how we are behaving right now to come from any of us. Can everyone raise their hands when they want to speak? No one must open their mic. If you open your mic without being noted, I will remove you from this platform. That includes Honorable Litsiye, that includes Honorable Chirwa, that includes the minister, that includes every single member in this committee right now. I will remove you from this platform if you open your mic without raising your hand. And you must drop your hands at some point, so that when you raise them again, it becomes evident that you're raising your hand. Honorable Chirwa, the minister is trying to respond. He is indicating that what he's unable to respond to, his team will respond to. Can we please stick to the issues at hand? Minister, can you please move to the next point? And colleagues, the truth is there are issues that are covered when other colleagues are not here. They are. And we have been understanding of the fact that members sit on multiple committees. There are issues, Honorable Pillay, that you raise that we have heard before and have been reported on or reported to on before. And Minister, we will have to be patient with some members, including Honorable Pillay, including Honorable Ngobo, including Honorable Kakao. But colleagues, when it is then indicated that this matter has come before the committee before, we will also assist through the secretariat to ensure that that information is shared with colleagues. So I do plead with you also, Minister, to be patient with our new members and our members who are hardly in this meeting. But I also expect that members who sit on multiple committees
also allow themselves to be guided. Because we can't go back, also colleagues. There's too much work that we have to cover. So if we're going to have to go back to also assist one member, it really is not going to assist us. There are issues that Honorable Mokgale wants an update on the NSF. Anele, the Secretariat, has been given the responsibility to update Honorable Pillay, to update Honorable Mokgale, to update Honorable Ngobo and Gagau on those matters. Because if we're going to go back all the time, it's also not going to assist us. So I implore on all of us to be patient with one another, including yourself, Minister, to be patient with members. Honorable Chirwa, I'm going to note your... Honorable Lizzie, I hope you are done because you are still on the platform. Are you done?
I'm done, Chair.
All right. Honorable Chirwa, your hand is still up. You may come forth.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I really just want to ask that in as much as every other person is doesn't grant the same kind of protection, because there was absolutely no reason for the minister to address the way he did. If we have honesty to point it out, it was absolutely out of touch, because I asked him the question. He said he didn't understand. I clarified it for him. I was going to tell what he needs these particular programs, but he's saying that he's worried that I don't know, and he can't even tell me about one or two on aerospace on drone. He could have just said, no, I'll give it on to the next person because I'm unfair at the moment on this particular thing, or whatever. But to state on things, because some of these members in the committee, we ask rhetorical questions to find out what the position of the department is on certain things. And I did not make a mistake. If there's a mistake that the minister has picked up, it's fine. But to be manipulative and provocative is absolutely unnecessary, because throughout this entire meeting, I have been nothing but cooperative, because I also want these answers. We also want to look at it as a political party. We also want to do our oversight duty on this particular thing. This is a fair question to ask. What are the innovation programs that the department has incentivized on aerospace drones and energy? And as why is this becoming a back and forth of the minister speaking on my personhood for no particular reason? Like, there is absolutely no reason why the minister is being emotional. I was such a small and simple question. He must just answer the question or say what you know, the other person will answer, and then move on. And I'm doing my duty on oversight and accountability. You can't tell me how to go about it or what to ask or how to ask about it. That is not his jurisdiction anymore. He doesn't supervise me as a member of this portfolio committee. He must account to me as a member of this portfolio committee. And those particular jurisdictions must not be confused or manipulated or provoked, because none will move, and I will respond to him on the same level of respect that he's giving to me. It's as simple as that. And I just ask the chairperson to just protect me as well when these things are happening, because my news protector, Bethany Amangala, and then you want to call point of order, because nobody is stating what the minister is wrong. And as long as I said, there was absolutely no reason why he said what he said.
Thank you, Honorable Chirwa. I don't think we are going to get ourselves to a point, colleagues, where we must now be, because one person is doing wrong, then we all do wrong. Colleagues, I'm going to implore on all of you to please not allow these meetings to degenerate. Let us treat one another with respect. Let us be patient with one another, and let us be considerate of one another. I implore on every single one of us. Let us not get to a point where we infringe on one another's ability to do our work, be it the executive, be it us members of parliament who are part of the non-executive members. Honorable Minister, can you please continue? Can you answer the question or delegate someone from your office to answer the question and move on to the next one kindly?
Chair, can I just respect your plea that if what I was saying is seen as a provocation, let me be patient, because all what I was saying is that a lot of these matters have been reported before this portfolio committee. That's all. And I will request the DG to give some details on these matters. And it wasn't provoking anyone. So let me take what you are saying and move on. I just want to say the other two things really I wanted to respond to very briefly are the very constructive and productive points made by Honorable Letsia. The issue of project management, Honorable Letsia, we are touching on a very important matter, which I have actually been raising with both my departments, that we did need to operate according to project management principles. There is some of this that is happening in both my departments. But we need to increase on that. I've also said at DHET in particular that I would like that all our DDGs are sensitized, even if they don't do the details, but are sensitized to the principles of project management. I think this is a very important matter. One would even concede, Honorable Letsi, that this approach that we are suggesting actually is something that needs to be considered by government as a whole. It would do us a great deal to actually have every senior manager at least sensitive about what project management is. And those who are managing projects, which many of the things we do are also trained specifically in project management. That's the first thing. I mean, one welcomes that. We'll try and do our best. Just like you, Honorable Letsi, I am a great believer in project management and its principles and practices. I also agree, the last point I want to raise on how we showcase our achievements, as Honorable Letsi is saying. Because indeed, there is lots of things that we are doing which are positive, and we are not adequately putting them across. I just want to give you one example on what we are doing. Which if acting chief director were communications as well as stakeholders, Mr. Akimasu, is working on something that I had suggested we must do with the CETAs in particular, to say that we actually need to have a mechanism of communicating all the good work that the CETAs are doing. There are challenges in the CETAs, no one denies that, but also there is lots of good work that is being done by the CETAs. One example just being the skills centers that some of the CETAs are building. The one innovation hub I was launching in Richmond in a few weeks, and then we have a massive skills center in Skukuni that we will also be opening during the course of this year, hopefully. And then say, but we don't adequately communicate a lot of good work that the CETAs are doing, including training that they are doing. I also mentioned the issue of the CETAs beginning to come in on high-end skills that are mainly needed by DSI and its entities and its associate, the work that we are doing. Again, we take that as a constructive proposal, including, as you say, the National Skills Fund, that despite the fact that it has those problems, but at the same time, there is lots of good work that is being done by the NSF to support skills development. Chair, allow me to end there. I don't think I've left anything that I should have said as the minister. Otherwise, I thought that the rest of the things are actually best dealt with by both DG Mjoakha and the acting DG Uthembi Safuchane. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Minister, for those responses. And we trust that your colleagues will be able to respond to the rest. DG Safuchane, over to you. You are excused at one, Minister.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you very much to the Honorable Minister for all those responses that have been provided. Honorable Chair, I am going to ask the respective heads of branches, those that are responsible for the programs that have been presented, to provide those responses, and the colleagues will be briefed to make sure that we don't have a massive overrun in terms of time. But perhaps, Chair, if I can just quickly indicate, because there were two major questions for Program 6. The one was the issue and concern regarding the accreditation or rather non-accreditation of community college centers. I must indicate that this target is in relation to quarter 4. Yes, indeed, the community colleges, we have currently 24 that have full accreditation from the QCTO and the CETAs. which means that these colleges are able to continue with their skills programs and also with their occupational programs. The non-accreditation was mainly in relation to not meeting the requirements of the occupational health and safety, and this is mainly in relation to where the colleges are operating from. But we are working on this, and we are putting in measures in place to make sure that there is compliance in that regard. And this question was from Honorable Chirwa. The last question on community colleges specifically was from Honorable King. She wanted to know which community colleges work with which CETAs and whether they're in all provinces. Indeed, all CETAs have partnerships with the community colleges, but they would vary from CETA to CETA. It's not all CETAs for one particular college, but it's all CETAs. They work with all our community colleges and it's in all provinces. Honorable Chair, I want to indicate that we do have a database that gives the specific indication in relation to this matter. I will then ask Program 1 to start, followed by Program 2, in terms of the responses, and they have noted all the questions. Through you, Chairperson, if we can get DDG Bobo Vava to provide the responses on Program 1. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much to the Minister, Chairperson, Honorable Members, and Acting DG, Ms. Thembisa Fuchane. Good afternoon. Chairperson, I'm going to respond to two main questions that relate to corporate services in particular, and the CFO will respond to the question relating to procurement and the attainment of targets in the procurement space. Now, Chair, please allow me to switch off my video in the interest of good connectivity. In respect to the first question that has been asked for corporate services on the issue of the generator, Chairperson, which has affected our ability to meet the target of 98% connectivity, and we were at 95%. meaning that we underperformed by 3%. We have started the processes of acquiring the generator, Chair. However, when a decision was taken that the department will be relocating to the CSIR, we had to suspend the procurement of the generator, as we know that at the CSIR, we are actually not going to be using or in need of a generator, considering the infrastructure that is at the CSIR. So we've had to suspend that procurement. However, the department does have two generators, one that is dedicated to our servers in the department, so that our operations are not severely hampered when there is a load shedding. And that generator is indeed proving to be quite helpful. The landlord also has a generator in the facilities. I'm speaking now mainly to the building, the main head office building at 123 Francis Barr Street, which is supplying us with power for lighting and the usage of the lifts. However, we do continue to be affected, Chairperson, when it comes to the other buildings of the department. The second question was relating to the post-provision norms. When did we start with the implementation? Chair, the year 2020 was meant to be the first year of implementing the post-provisioning norms as approved by the minister. However, we had to defer to the following year, which was 2021, as most colleges were actually not ready for us to implement the norms in 2020. So we then had to enter into discussions with National Treasury for the funds that were transferred to the department to be transferred to colleges. That was in regard to 2020. In 2021, Chairperson, we implemented in 26 colleges, and that overlapped up to 2022 because there were some challenges at colleges where, for instance, we had disputes in regard to matching and placement of staff. Some, you know, staff members believing that they should be promoted automatically or to be placed, you know, against posts that were not necessarily qualified, you know, to be placed on. So we did have those challenges, and we as a department had to put up measures to resolve those disputes. Now, 2022 was the second year of implementation with the remaining 24 colleges. In 2021, we started with 26. In 2022, it was 24 colleges, and all 24 colleges participated in the implementation in 2022, which was our second year of implementation. But again, Chair, we still had the similar challenges that we encountered in 2021, wherein there were disputes. We also had to now, institute those dispute resolution processes at college level. In some colleges, for instance, like Ikhala, we even had to put a moratorium on the filling of vacancies because there were serious challenges with the implementation of the PPN. One of the reasons we also were not able to fully implement is that some of the employees, Chair, have criminal records who have been employed by colleges. And the department took a decision that we are not going to transfer any employee that has got a criminal case until those employees are held fully accountable, you know, for such criminal cases. So we still have a few cases where we are unable to transfer staff to personnel in the department. This year, Chairperson, which is our third year of implementation, the focus is now on the filling of the vacancies and the mopping up exercise. Indeed, we do have delays in the filling of vacancies, wherein colleges will not be advertising posts or delaying in advertising posts as per the delegations of authority. Now, in respect to that, we are going to submit a report, Chairperson, with the details per college, how many posts, you know, were vacant, how many have been advertised, and how many have been filled. We do have such a report. We are going to share it with the committee. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Acting DG.
Thank you, Ms. Mbobo-Vava. Program 2.
Thank you, Acting DG. There were a few questions that were raised under Program 2, and I'll try and answer those. I think some I will have to combine. But the first one, she raised the concern around the underperformance and the challenges relating to that in respect to our commitment on the signing of the MOUs or the new agreement with the foreign countries. I just want to update the honorable members and indicate that we had committed to one of the two has been finalized on the 9th of May. The minister entered into an MOU with the minister of higher education in the UAE on the 9th of May 2023. It is regrettable that this was only done in this new financial year, 2023-2024, on the 9th of May. But the delay was not on our side, Chair, if I may just clarify that. We had done everything we could to support the minister to get the relevant documentation finalized, also our legal services. I think for the longest time, we've been waiting for UAE to do same on their side so that they are ready to sign the MOU. The second one,
Chair, it relates to the MOU with Mozambique. It has been, I think it's the same challenge we've had with the UAE, but we've taken a stance that since when this could not be finalized by end of the financial year, 31 March 2023, it must then be deferred to this financial year. And we hope that it will be done during the BRICS meeting scheduled for July. Honorable Khan also raised the issue about the capacity challenges which affected achievement of a number of targets relating to infrastructure. And I think it was Honorable Ngobo also raised a similar concern. And the issue here is to just clarify what is it that we are doing to try and address the issue. I think the first thing to raise, Chair, is to indicate that we are equally concerned. I think it was Honorable Ngobo who said, Honorable Lay, who said almost 50% of the non-achievements relate to this issue of capacity, particularly in Program 2 and specifically in relation to infrastructure. I think the intervention is there because we are equally concerned, is really to make sure that there's requisite capacity. And the first thing that the department has done was to then recruit the appointment of the chief director responsible for infrastructure. And the second thing, because he would need support to get the work done in relation to infrastructure in that chief directorate, is ready to ensure that the staff that are currently on contract, their contracts are renewed so that at least there is the requisite capacity to support. To recruit a built environment specialist so that we are able to get support and the requisite capacity to support the PSET infrastructure program in relation to our pro infrastructure projects that are across our institutions, be it universities, CETs, and so forth. And then lastly, the third one is generally the capacity issue that is required at the level of the infrastructure staff within the institutions themselves, with the focus on CET, TVET, and the universities, and particularly the 10 targeted universities that are involved in the infrastructure project. The other question was actually not a question, but a request, and I think it came from Honorable Ngobo to get the department to brief the committee comprehensively on the report on the GBV and gender equality. Chair, we are ready. The report is ready. We will await invitation to that effect. We will be able to really provide the committee with a comprehensive briefing on this. And I think there was a similar a request from Honorable. I'm just trying to check if there was a similar one. Okay, I think that was that one from Honorable Nova. So we'll await a request to that effect in terms of invitation. I just want to add, I know that the CFO is going to respond to the issue of challenges that we're experiencing regarding payment of invoices within 30 days. But I think Honorable Lithie's line of question is really helping us to really address this. Because the manner in which we've been reporting, Honorable Lucia, has not been helpful, I think I must admit. I think in future, we should be able to then give the community a breakdown of invoices received, how many were valid and paid within 30 days, how many were invalid and not paid within 30 days, and how many were subsequently paid. Because then that will be able to give a very good picture in terms of how we are dealing with this. Because even if you look at how the invoices have been paid in the passport, you will realize that over 400 million was processed and only 4 invoices were not processed from 2 suppliers, mainly because there were issues pertaining to validity and so forth. But I know that the CFO is going to talk to you to this in detail. Chair, thank you very much. Lastly, there was a question around where is the process in respect to N2F Amendment Bill from Honorable King. Just to indicate that this is already have gone been submitted to the minister, to the president. The department is really awaiting the president to attend. And just to indicate that minister has also returned to the president, following up on this bill. Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mgiba. CFO, please.
Thank you, DG Futani. Thank you, Chair and members. Chair, I just want to make you aware that due to network problems in the building, I am connecting from a DDG Sotrikwa's gadget. If it's okay, I can switch off the video, Chair. I just wanted to make the chairperson and members aware of this. I will start by responding to the question that was raised by Honorable Kakao on the issue of 40% spend on procurement, being set aside to women-owned businesses. Firstly, I would like to say that this target was pronounced in 2020 on Women's Day by the President and was subsequently incorporated in Department.
So we've lost the CFO.
Indeed, we have. Can one of the colleagues please indicate to the colleagues there, to Sis Pretty, that we can't hear her?
Through you, Chair, if while she's connecting, if we could take but she's with Dr. Sotrikwa, so Dr. Sotrikwa will also not be able to connect. If in the meantime, Chair, Honorable Chair agrees, we can take DDG Zungu.
That's okay, DDG Futshane.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. DDG Zungu, please come in.
Thank you very much, Acting DG Futshane. I would also kindly request to switch off my video due to the bandwidth. Greetings to the Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, as well as our Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister, the DG from DSI and all the other DDGs from DSI as well, and all the colleagues from DHET. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I am aware, Chair, that there's some of the questions that will be responded to in writing by the TVET branch. And one of them, we will be working together with DDG Mbobo Vava, who has already responded to some of the issues in relation to this most thorny issue in the TVET, which is the underspending of the PPN and the delays in the implementation of the PPN. I think she has responded extensively, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, in relation to that. I'll just touch on a few things in regards to that. Let me start with the Honorable Kakao in relation to the question of the period it takes to issue certificates. Indeed, there are some dependencies in this particular target, and those relate mainly to the fact that we can only issue certificates once the results have been published. And the results are published around January and moved towards the end of January. Only then that we received applications for certificates. But even when we received, there's still some disputes that happened in relation to the results. So we allow a period for students to appeal where they feel that maybe the results that were released are not in line with what they expected in that regard. So we have to look at the outcome of the results and then allow the period for appeals. Once the appeals have been concluded, we will then be able to start issuing the certificates. The second dependence is that the printing of the certificates is not done within the department. So we rely on government printing or printers that will then take their time as well before they can complete the printing work because they are not just doing our department, but they are also doing other departments. So that is one other dependency that causes the delays in terms of this particular area. However, we are working hard in ensuring that we improve in this regard, particularly around the issue of the printing of the certificates. The second issue that Honorable Kakao raised, which was raised by other honorable members around the curriculum transformation, how far are we? The review of curricula happens on a continuous basis. There is no start and end because, programs change as we speak around the digital savviness programs or ICT-related programs. As we speak, something new is coming, but we are trying to keep up with those trends. There is a focus discussion or a curriculum transformation seminar that will be held by the TVET branch from the 28th till the 30th of August this year, where we'll be zooming on the curriculum transformation of the entire sector, looking at all our programs, be it the state-funded programs that we are offering, but also taking into account that we now seeing a great increase in uptake of the occupational programs, which in the main are accredited by CITAS as well as the QCTO. So that will also encompass all of those programs that are being offered. But also look at other modalities of how can these programs be offered, because we can't rely just on physical infrastructure that is available, but we're also looking at how can we infuse technology in the delivery of these programs as we move forward. So that discussion will then focus on this particular area. But over the past 2 years, the 2021-2022 period, there are a number of programs that have been reviewed. And I know that there was a question from Honorable King that asked for a list of those programs, which will gladly provide to the committee for 2021, 2022, as well as 2022, 2023. There's a couple of programs that have already been reviewed. I will not be able to take through all of them. Just a few examples, the fluid mechanics, mechanical drafting, mechanical drawings and design, engineering physics, industrial electronics and so forth. So there's quite a number of them that have already gone through that process. Moving on to Honorable Boshoff, the one issue that you touched on was around the alignment of examination cycles within the TVET. There are discussions around that. That will form part of the curriculum transmission seminar that will take place in August. Particularly the engineering trimesters as well as the business studies trimesters, to see if those can then be aligned as we move forward. So there is a committee that is looking into that, but it will have its own implications as well in terms of the the resources to be deployed or that are currently deployed to honor this or execute this task of the examination cycles within the TVET sector. The second issue that Honorable Bishop raised was around the Northern Cape Urban. As far as we recall, there was a response, Honorable Chair, that was provided, I think it was around November 2022. And following that, there was a parliamentary question, I think it's 4567, which we also responded to. But if there are other outstanding matters, maybe that Honorable Bishop would like to follow up, we'll then also do that. There is an issue that we are still investigating. We have not concluded. And that issue is around the implementation of the recruitment processes as well as the SEM processes in that college, which once that investigation is concluded, will then also provide the report in that regard. The next question came from Honorable King, and I think I've touched on the issue of programs, which I've already alluded to, but part of that was around the measuring the impact of such reviews, which I think it might be for us premature at the moment. We are only on the first cycle of the implementation of the reviewed programs, and we normally give it a three-year period before we can measure the impact of such. So it will be premature to provide such a report, because the first cohort that has been involved in this program has not even concluded. So we can only be able perhaps to measure the impact in terms of the performance over a three-year period. The other issue that Honorable King touched was the issue of the PPN, which which my colleague, DTG Mbobo Baba, has already covered. But part of it was around the ratios of the lecturing staff per course, which I think part of the written report will be able to provide. But generally, the ratio is for theory subjects is 1:30. So one lecturer, 30 students. But for practical workshops, it's normally 1:15, which was inherited from the old, DOL or Manpower Act ratios of being in the training workshop. So 1:15. This has some financial implications as well, because it means if the first group that was doing theory, which we had 1:30, now if they move towards the practical workshop, it means now you need to break that group into two. That then add cost in terms of your lecturing staff, because you now need two people per group, which it should have been one. But we will also look at the support versus the academic staff ratio. We're still operating on an old, I'm not sure if honorable members are aware of the old Fikaji model, that guided us when colleges just merged early in the 2000s, and we adopted what was called the Fikaji model. Professor Fikaji of the Cape Peninsula was the one tasked to design this model. It required a certain amount of resources which colleges could not afford, and we got stuck in that. And the implementation of the PPN is actually partially addressing that shortcoming. And we hope that the sooner we conclude this, it will assist the colleges. The next question was from Honorable Ngobo on the number of DSUs that has been established. Currently, Honorable Ngobo asked for the specific colleges. Motheo, TVET College in the Free State, is one of them. Vembe TVET College in the Bopo, Boland College in the Western Cape, as well as the Southwest Gauteng College in Gauteng, and in KZN we have Umfolozi TVET College. However, we do have some other colleges at a small scale that are starting. The aim that we are driving as a department and the branch is to ensure that almost all TVET colleges do have the disability support units in each and every one of the colleges. But what we have done so far in creating an enabling environment for learners or for students with disabilities, in terms of the infrastructure, we have made sure that 10% of the SEEG grant that we give to each college must address the issue of infrastructure, the creation of walkways that are user-friendly to disabled students, as well as the classroom setups that will allow for certain equipment for blind students and so forth. So those monies are earmarked for that. So that is the move from the department that we have made. So these colleges that I've mentioned have actually set up a model that can be rolled out to the remainder of the sector. And moving towards closure, the other question from Honorable Pillay, in terms of the TVET targets that were not achieved, what we have analyzed as a management within the TVET, firstly, is around the setting of SMART targets by our senior managers, which we have since addressed with the support of Mr. Mkiba in the planning, and also from within the branch, we have one of our chief directors that used to work for AG, who is also assisting us in the crafting of the TIDs and making sure that the reporting and the provisioning of the portfolio of evidence is up to date. Because the main challenge is that even though the work is done, but the managers were unable to provide evidence. A typical example, a target that was talking to the number of protocols signed by the college. The collection of the evidence, that's what led us to not achieve, but it's not to say they don't have. Almost all colleges, on average, no college will have protocols that are less than 50 throughout the 50 colleges. So the collection of evidence, which is something that we are working on and making sure that it's provided. The question on the number of colleges, graduates that were offered experiential learning, this one I'm not sure whether it's referring to the target, the national target that we had of 10,000, of which we overachieved. That's an on-continuing base. But in this, we also have the NCV students that are offered work exposure from time to time, which we would probably ask the college to provide, because that is done at an institutional level. We will then request maybe the colleges to provide us that information. I've already covered the PPN implementation as well as DDG Mbobo Vava, which was also asked by Honorable Pillay. Honorable Yabo, I think also on the issue of the PPN, I think and the filling of vacancies, that has been covered. And DDG Mbobo Vava did highlight some of the challenges that we experienced during the CIC processes as well as the PIC processes, the college implementation committees as well as the provincial implementation committees. There was some pushback from social partners, in particular, labor in this regard, but also the issues of matching that created problems in terms of filling those vacancies. But I think these have since been addressed in the main. And we will, Honorable Letier, we will be providing that written report as you've requested, and DDG Mbobo Vava, because the issue of filling of vacancies is not our competence as the TVET branch. We rely on the support from the branch corporate services, hence DDG Mbobo was the one responding in that regard. So ours is to send requests and say this is what we need. They then provide support and ensure that those vacancies are filled. We will also provide the number of colleges, the 26 and the other 24, how far are they, one of them. And lastly, Honorable Manani, so on the examiners and the moderation moderators who are delaying the submission of their claims, where we first have to wait for the papers to be approved before their claims can be processed. And I think that's what is causing, because the process of getting the approval of the papers is the one that takes longer, because it's got some tedious quality assurance, protocols that have to be followed. And during that, I think that's what then leads to the delays in putting the claims in this regard. Honorable Chair and Acting DG, may I just pause there? Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. It's me again, Priti Makukule. I'm now joining from DDG, Acting DG Puchani's budget. I would like to start by addressing the question that was raised by Honorable Khakhau on the target to spend 40% of our procurement to women-owned businesses. This target was pronounced in 2020 on Women's Day by the President and was subsequently incorporated in department's procurement strategies. We were encouraged when we were compiling the APP for 2020-23 by the DPME to set this target. At that time, we had preferential procurement regulations that were promulgated in 2017, and these regulations allowed organs of state to set aside procurement for the purpose of transformation. And this included setting aside procurement to women-owned businesses. And when we set this target, these 2017 regulations that I'm talking about were still applicable. So it was going to be feasible to set aside procurement to women-owned businesses. Most members will remember that the AFRIB business took the Minister of Finance to court, asking the court to declare these regulations unconstitutional. And the judgment was delivered towards the end of the financial year, just before this APP could start in April, and it was delivered in favor of AfriBusiness. And what happened subsequently, National Treasury issued an instruction advising organs of state to hold the tender processes in abeyance. So at that point, it was even difficult to determine what to do with this target, especially that the timeframes were not known as to when will this regulation problem be resolved. Later on last year, we were advised by National Treasury to proceed with tenders and other procurement, but the specific paragraphs that were addressing transformation were suspended. Therefore, we couldn't, as a result, apply those. And it was only later in a year when then the new regulations, procurement regulations, were promulgated. And these regulations now are in effect, and they do empower departments to develop their own supply chain management policies. And we have indeed, as a department, and this is now in response to in the second part of Honorable Khakhau's question, on whether has this problem been solved or not. So yes, the legislation problem has been solved, Honorable Khakhau. We have developed a new supply chain management policy in the department, and this is the policy that we have been applying since the beginning of the financial year. And in addition to the 40% target that is set for women-owned businesses, Honorable Chair and members will remember that in our current APP for 2023-24, we have not only retained this target, but we have also expanded to other areas, such as one, businesses that are owned by youth, two, businesses that are owned by people with disabilities, three, businesses owned by Black people, and four, businesses, small businesses. So we have actually expanded this category, having to recognize that our policy empowers us to do so. And I will now move to Honorable King's question on the understanding of compensation of employees, and my colleagues have covered me on that around the operation and implementation of the PPN processes. Therefore, my focus will be on the budget issues. So Honorable King asked whether the department has made any environment consideration when it realized that there were some challenges with the PPN process. In responding to that question, Honorable King, yes, indeed, the department has made those considerations. What we did during the adjustment budget process, after having to assess the state of the implementation of the PPN, we realized that some colleges really, there was no way that they would make it they will be able to implement before the end of the financial year. Therefore, we quantified the value of the compensation budget that are linked to those colleges. And as a result, we then, during the adjustment budget process, requested a variant of 260 million rand to move funding from the COE to the TVET subsidy so that colleges can, those who were not ready and who were not going to be ready, even in the remaining period of the financial year, could then continue to pay salaries in terms of their current processes. Then what transpired subsequent to adjustment budget process, we then did a further assessment when we realized that there were challenges. And we realized at that point that actually even those colleges that we thought they will make it, there were other challenges, and my colleagues have already alluded to those. But I think the challenges from the budget management perspective was that the adjustment budget process had already passed, and neither the department nor National Treasury have powers to approve variant from compensation of employees. It can only be done or approved by Parliament, and that process is already passed. So hence, we couldn't do anything about that potential underspending. But also to mention some of the another variant that we made, as a result of this projected underspending under compensation, members will remember when we came here during quarter three, we have reported that we've made a variant of 54 million from the compensation of employees to NSFAS admin budget in order to fund phase two of their ICT system. And we were happy that National Treasury supported this variant and it was subsequently approved by Parliament. So these are some of the remedial actions that we had to take as a department, having to note that NSFAS had budget challenges and we already projecting some of us underspending rather from the compensation of employees budget. Honorable King further asked that we provide information on spending on consultants and legal fees during quarter four. We have spent 2.4 million rand on legal fees, and this is for different cases. It doesn't include fees to a special investigation unit, Honorable King. I will assume that Honorable King was referring to the work of the SIU that they are doing at the NSF and NSFAS. And the spending in that regard is being accounted for, is being borne and accounted for by those respective entities and not the department. And we then spent 2.1 million rand during the quarter for consultants. Chair, our network went down as Honorable Chirwa was beginning to speak, and we were reconnected when Honorable Pillay was concluding his questions. But what I got from my colleagues who were lucky to remain connected, they said from my side, the question that was asked by Honorable Chirwa had to do with the target on 40% women, and they've shared some of the comments that Honorable Chirwa has made. But I would believe that the responses that I have has given in responding to Honorable Kakao will have covered some of the questions that Honorable Chira had. Otherwise, Chair, I'm happy to provide further information in that regard. Honorable Litsie raised an issue and concern around the issue of 30 days. And thank you, Mr. Mgiba, for covering some parts of the question. And Honorable Litsie, we do agree this is a concern and this is a compliance issue. And the legislation is saying 100%. So even if we say four invoices, it doesn't make it right, because the legislation is saying 100%. And really, we do understand that your concern is justified, and we are equally concerned about this target as a department. And I'm happy that Mr. Mgiba has clarified the issue of 19 versus 4, that the 19 invoices are the invoices for the entire reporting period from April 2022 until March, and 15 of those late payment invoices will have reported them in the previous quarters. And most of these invoices, actually 12 out of those 15, were mainly affected by the closure of the building. Members will remember that our building around June, July was closed for almost, I think it's the month of July, I don't have the dates with me here, was closed for about a full month. And it was really difficult to manage, to continue as we should, when coming to some of the transactions that we needed to process. But for this quarter that we are referring to, it's yes, four invoices. And these invoices, they affect two service providers, because three of those four belong to one service provider. And Mr. Mgiba has partly covered some of the reasons. And we'll also expand on our reporting going forward, though we don't anticipate, Honorable Lizzie, and I'm on record, that we will be reporting on this deviation or non-achievement from this financial year going forward. But also to mention on the issue of consequences, we also had a case where this late payment was attributed to where one official, because remember, it's a value chain. Before we process, an official who has received the service must give us a thumbs up to say we are happy, these goods and services were duly rendered or received, and therefore then we can pay. So there was a delay in terms of that official in having to confirm that, and that official is based outside the department in other offices. We have recommended some remedial steps against that official for that, but we continue to really improve our business processes, also to cut some unnecessary red tape. We are a big department and we have lots of offices. There are lots of entry points for these invoices. We've got regional presence, and then it makes the internal control systems to be vulnerable, but it's not an excuse. With all those challenges, we must still make it work, and we continue to strive to improve in this regard. And Honorable Litsie ask questions. It will seem that he was asking these questions on behalf of another member. We were having network problems at that point. I'm not sure which member was that, but I'll nonetheless respond to the question. It was around the unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful. The department has not incurred, or at least is not aware of any unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure incurred during the fourth quarter. And the second question, it was the same question, but asking in terms of the annual, the annual reporting, or in terms of whether the same non-compliance expenditure have been incurred in other quarters. Today, Honorable Chair Litsie and Honorable Members, is the last day to submit the financial statements to the Auditor General. And we have presented the draft financial statement yesterday at the audit committee of the department. And based on what we have reviewed so far, we had not identified any irregular expenditure, any unauthorized expenditure, any fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was incurred this financial year. But I wish to mention that we're still finalizing the review processes, in the remaining hours of the day. And there is one transaction where we're still waiting for technical advice from National Treasury. And it will also depend on that technical advice and the accounting treatment, whether it might affect this classification or not. So yes, I think I will post the thing, DG and Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Mamfuchana. Thank you, Honorable Chair. It is Nasia Sotikwa. Good afternoon to all the members. Mine is to respond, and I'll try to be quick because I'm aware that you have time restrictions, Honorable Chair. I will start with Honorable Hahao's comments around what does it mean when we say we had delays in the release of funds. The best way to explain it is at that time, we were reprioritizing internal funds, which we wanted to direct to NSFAS. And that took some time because it meant we had to take from different programs. And these programs suffered the consequence. One of them is the UCDB, and that meant that we could not advise the universities how much to budget for on expenditure for UCDP programs. So that was it. And I must indicate it was a very sore point because we're taking from developmental funds internally to support NSFAS. The repercussions are then expressed in the delays in terms of implementation and execution by universities. And then there was a comment around capacity, and I think a few members made a comment around the capacity in chief directorate. So I will be pointed in my reply by saying that the chief directorate, which really did not have any directors to execute research-related work, was the policy unit. The chief director there has subsequently resigned, but he had up until the last day of his tenure in the department indicated that he would finalize the documents. But I suppose not being able to do two directors' work finally impacted on his ability to submit the two reports. So it's in that way that we were constrained from a capacity point of view. And then Honorable Boshoff raised the question of the change of the start year. Last year, when we were, the beginning of this year, when we were addressing the start of the academic year, we were extremely surprised by the late DBE results. I have subsequently inquired whether we are going to experience the same come 2024 January. And the preliminary answer I have is that yes, the results are likely to be released in the third week of January. I'm hoping that our DG, that is DG Sishi, and through our acting DDG Fuchani, will engage with the DG at DBE to see what will work best. But I believe that we may have to start engaging with USAF on what the possibilities are around the reviewing the academic calendar. Bearing in mind that this is quite a protracted process in universities. We have to take these matters right through Senate to Council. Notwithstanding, Chair, I think it's an important question, and that is the preliminary answer I have for Honorable Boshoff. Then on the question coming from Honourable Member King around the e-learning strategies in universities, I just want to quickly indicate, and this is augmenting Minister's response, is that the CHE is currently taken up the task of looking at how quality and the learning blended model combine in practice. And they have extended the concessions to all the university, that is the concession of allowing blended learning to continue through 2023 to 2024, 2025. But that concession is conditional. They said to all the universities in their communique that the HEQC is going to review in June on whether quality is being sustained, and universities are going to have to submit individual submissions in this regard to see if they will be permitted to continue with blended learning up to 2025. We are engaging closely with CHE on this one, because it invariably means funding requirements. And of course, that would also mean my having to engage with our CFO and National Treasury. So it has funding implications, particularly if it becomes a permanent arrangement. Then on the question from Honourable Sibiya, and I think that spoke again to the vacancies. I hope I have addressed it, Honourable Member. Honourable Member, again, Yabo also raised the issue of capacity, which I hope I've covered. But he added another question, which is the how do we fund postgraduate students? You'll be happy to know, Honourable Member, that when we're in Cabinet, we were seized with the same question. And we are looking at the funding model and seeing what provisions can be made. It should be noted that in some universities, when the protests arise, it's because the postgraduate students are really without funds. So it is something we need to attend to. And I do hope once we finalize the funding model this year, you would have a view of what provisions are made for the postgraduate students. They will be categorized with the missing middle students, and a solution hopefully will attend to both these two clusters. Then Honourable Member Chirwa raised the question about placements, and I just wanted to provide a general response there too, and that is that we have been, at least throughout the department, all the DGs in their KRAs have to speak to how we are supporting the needs. And within the university education branch, we have two opportunities. One, the Presidential Employment Fund, which is in its second year running, will enable us to place 3,000 graduates. And then we also hope to approach the NSF, and we hope our proposal will make sense to them on placements of the students. And Honourable Chira, absolutely placements, we'd want to be equal in our approach. So it would be placements across STEM and humanities. And then on the last question, and forgive me, I missed it because we were booted out of the network. But I think it spoke to how are we approaching the issue of the water crisis. I noticed directed to DSI, and we always turn to them, as we did with the energy crisis, on how to support the universities. I must indicate, Chair, that thus far we have not had complaints from our students. But of course, we do not want to wait until the complaints arise. We want to be proactive and ensure that universities have initiatives in place, particularly the universities close to the Vaal or who are supported by the Vaal Dam. Chair, I hope I've covered. I will now hand over to our acting DG.
Thank you to the CFO and thank you to Dr. Sotrikwa. Chairperson, Honorable Chair, thank you for indulging us. We only have one last one, which is DDG Mvalo. Over to you, DDG Mvalo.
Thank you very much, Acting Director General, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Minister of Higher Education, Science and Innovation, Deputy Minister of Higher Education, Science and Innovation, members of the Portfolio Committee, Director General of the Department of Science and Innovation, my esteemed DDGs, both in both departments, as well as colleagues. I will also then, if that is in order, my Honorable Chair, to switch off my system. Seemingly in the department we have been caught up in this virus of struggling with the connectivity. Thanks very much. Okay, I have teamed questions that were relating specifically to skills branch or program 5 into two areas. One area is with regard to good governance standard, and the second one, of course, is the performance of in Q4 of the of program 5. I must mention that the CETA good governance standard is having about 13 indicators that we are testing with regard to whether CETAs are meeting a good governance standards. Those will include, amongst others, audit action plans, minutes of the AA meetings, as well as audit committee meetings, a declaration of interest, approved the code of conduct, approved system of delegations within the CETAS system, and so on. And then it's correct to say we had about two CETAS. And I know both Honorable Yabo as well as Honorable Billy, Honorable Kakao as well, to say we need to mention what are those CETAs, which are those CETAs. And obviously I can mention one was Energy and Water CETA, which basically failed to submit the minutes of the AA meetings for all quarters of the period under review, as well as PCETA, which is the Public Service Sector Education and Training Authority. I must also comfort members of this honorable committee that we have since received all the information that we required in those two CETAs. I must also make an indication that what we normally do, we write to the CETAs. They know that on a quarterly basis, they have to give reports to the department. And some obviously would not on time submit those reports. I recall the two CETAs. I personally engaged with the CEOs, of which they will say to me that we submitted the information, and then it will be like conversation between officials within the skills branch and the CETA CEOs, but then ultimately the information will be submitted. So I don't really see any challenge of any CETA in terms of struggling to submit the required information, because it is a simple information. And we normally issue then non-compliance letters to all the CETAs which are not complying with a good governance standard. And I must say, once we have issued such a non-compliance letter, they normally respond quite very positively. And then the last communication to all of them was that they must also share with us as a department the plans as to how they will be addressing this anomaly in this current financial year, that is 2023-2024, so that you know is one of those areas which are being prioritized by them. Another area is this, Honorable Chirwa, was asking amongst others as to what is the department doing with regard to employers which are closing down and the programs basically which were or are affected. And then closing down is with reference, of course, to COVID-19 global health pandemic. Members of the portfolio committee recall quite very well that we, the president, that was in April 2020, announced some of the tax relief measures. Part of those measures was a skills development levy holiday, which meant then therefore that companies which are required in terms of the Skills Development Act as well as Skills Development Levies Act to pay 1% of their salary bill. Basically, it's all those companies whose access will be above 500,000 in terms of their salary bill, in terms of the Act. So for the period of 4 months, the intervention we as the skills development system that we implemented as a result of President's announcement was this skills levy holiday for a period of 4 months. When we're doing calculation, I recall at the time, we were expected to have received a revenue of 19 billion. As a result of this skills levy holiday, our revenue went down to about 12.4 billion or so. It went down about 8 billion. So that was the contribution that we're making as the skills and levy system to those employers who were struggling, especially during the time of COVID-19 global health pandemic. And then obviously to top that, on the 1st April 2021, the Minister of Education, Science and Innovation increased the grant that is being paid to employers who are hosting apprentices. Before 1st April 2021, it was just about 165,000. So it means if you as an employer, you are going to host Mvalo for a period of an apprenticeship, let's say 3 to 4 years, and then you'll be able to get 165,000 for the duration of that apprenticeship program. Then this was increased to 206,290 1st April 2021. So these are some of the interventions from our side to say to the employers, open up your workplaces. Can you turn each and every workplace into a training space? So that we can have especially your artisanal programs being ratcheted. So far, I must say, we are seeing results. If we look into, for example, in 2019, 2020, that is just before COVID-19, we had about 24,000. Those were the artisans which were found competent. That was 24,000, shy of 6,000 to our 2030 targets. And then came COVID-19, that went down to 15,107, because now employers were struggling and there were lockdown regulations and all the requirements that were expected of the employers. We're seeing recovery now. It's something that is exciting us, though targets are not met, but there is a recovery because from that 15,107 in 2020-21, which was a drop from 24,000, now we're standing at 19,536. So those are the artisans which are found competent in various sectors of the economy. So this tells us that there is some relief, there is some recovery with regard to the economy of the country. So it's because this question, I'm trying to bring some nexus with the questions that were asked by Honorable Yabo as well as Honorable Eletsi, with regard to why Program 5 we are having so many targets which are not met in the fourth quarter, of which all those targets are system targets, and they are all quantitative in nature. So meaning therefore they are numbers. And I must inform the portfolio committee that though we're hit by COVID-19, especially in 2019, 20, 20, 21, as the branch, we took a decision that we are not going to revise down targets, because we could have opted for that option so that we can meet our targets to say, okay, then based on what, especially the baseline from COVID-19 in 2020, 2021, let's review all our targets. But then we agreed we are not going to review our targets because we know challenges that are being faced by young people. And you know what are the implications of a young person participating in an apprenticeship, participating in a learnership. We know, unemployment opportunities are quite very high. So that's the challenge, honorable members of the committee, that we've placed ourselves as Program 5 to say we're not going to revise them down. And I can tell right now, as we're seated here, that even 25, 26, if we look into workplace-based learning programs, instead of saying in 24, 25, the target is to have young people placed in workplace-based program, 190,000, that is the target in 2024, 2025. In 25, 26, we didn't say, let's cut, let's go back. We even increased to say 200,300. So that's the challenge we're faced with. The option could be to say, skills branch, can you review some of your targets, especially quantitative in nature, those ones which are arising from our CETA system in the main. But then it's a challenge that we've placed unto ourselves to say, let's navigate and relook that the economy is going to recover. We will be able to meet these targets under such difficult circumstances. Lastly, Honorable Yabo was raising an important point there. I know DDG Sokrikwa also ventured into that area. And you are saying, you know, learnerships, why not learnerships? We also look into your high-end skills, as it were. And I know there are these discussions to say we need to look on high-end skills, as well as we have to look into incentivizing. Currently the Minister of Employment and Labor will be publishing or is publishing on an annual basis the sectoral determination, which determines the stipends which are paid to all those who are participating in learnerships. And I can tell you, Honorable Yabo, the focus in our CETAs, including the NSF, is NQF level 1 up until NQF level 5 in the main. That's where we're focusing. It's your low to mid and skills interventions where we're focusing. And then I can perhaps maybe present some cogent engagement or discussion as to why we decide to focus into your NQF level 1 to NQF level 5. As was stated here, graduate unemployment in South Africa is standing at 10.6%. Well, it's a bit stagnant because also in the quarter four of 2022, it was at 10.6%. Now it tells us that therefore, graduate unemployment is not a big challenge that we are faced with as the country. But then as you go then to other qualifications, you'll see, especially your other tertiary qualifications, inclusive of our TVET. Unemployment is standing, as was stated here, at 23.5%, which is an increase from quarter four of 2022 from 21%. Now it's standing at 23.5%. And then I can tell you that mostly these ones in these categories or tertiary these other tertiary qualifications, you'll find majority of them also venturing into learnership programs. Well, it's even worse for those with a grade 12 or matric, as it were. The unemployment is at 35.6%, as was stated here, which has increased from the last quarter of 2022 from 34.4%. So there is increase also there. And then also those with no matric, or they are normally referred to as less matric. Unemployment, well, it's interesting because unemployment has dropped to 37.6% in quarter one of 2023 as compared to quarter four of 2022, whereby this was standing at 38.9%. Well, if you look generally, then we'll see that about 798,000 currently those who are not employed are with the tertiary qualifications, 798,000. Those who have completed secondary, meaning which that will be your grade 12, it's about 3.2 million. They are not employed. Those who have not completed secondary, that is your grade 12, 3.2 million unemployed. Well, if you add 3.2 and 3.2, roughly this is giving us 6.4 million. Those who have completed secondary schooling and those who have not completed, about 6.4 million out of 7.9 million in total are not employed. So it gives them therefore as a direction to say, your CETA system, your National Skills Fund, your community education and training, amongst others, we need to focus on those N2F levels, whereby we can catch up with these ones, this more than 6 million of unemployed with either grade 12 or less grade 12. So, but we hear the call that is being made to say, we need to look at this quite very seriously as well, not only to focus on these N2F levels, that is N2F level one up until N2F level five, or your metric, as it were, with the numbers I've shared and those with the less metric. I ran up a chair and esteemed members of the committee. I tried my best, but then obviously I must say we fully agree targets once on the annual performance plan, they must be met. Well, we've hanged ourselves and we continue to hang ourselves as program five to keep high with these targets, especially the quantitative targets. Perhaps it's going to be an in-house discussion amongst ourselves as to whether we can look at them, but then we agreed with regard to MTSF, let's not interfere with them. Let's keep them high as they are, and then let's try the best under the circumstances to meet these targets. Acting Director General, I realize that I've done some justice. I know that we are pressed for time. So if I can once again thank the chairperson, thank the minister, the deputy minister, and the members of this honorable committee together with DG and colleagues from DSI and Department of Higher Education and Training. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mvalo. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Please allow me to hand over to you. That covers the responses from the Department of Higher Education and Training. And thank you for allowing us this time.
Thank you very much, DDG Fuchane, and to the entire team at DHET for those responses. I hope members of the committee have been responded to. If members have not been adequately responded to, please indicate that to the secretariat in writing, and those questions will be sent to the department for a follow-up. I would like to implore colleagues from DSI, and I beg your pardon in relation to this. I had thought that we start at 3 o'clock with this afternoon's plenary. However, we start at 2 o'clock, so we are in fact actually late, but I am aware that some members have joined plenary on the other gadgets. And I would like to thus implore on colleagues from DSI, if they could please package their responses for our meeting on Friday. What we will do is that we'll afford colleagues about 30 minutes to respond to these questions at the beginning of Friday's meeting, and then we'll head into the program, into Friday's actual program.
I sincerely apologize for this inconvenience, if it is causing any inconvenience to colleagues, and really beg your indulgence in just being able to cooperate with us so that members are able to join plenary as it is budget vote one on the presidency. So having said that, colleagues, this meeting has come to an end. Thank you to both departments, and we will see each other in Friday's meeting with colleagues from DSI, as we also receive a presentation from the DSI and the HSRC on some interventions for young people there. With that being said, this meeting has come to an end, and we will see each other on Friday. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you to the honorable members.
Recording stopped.